ॐ सहनावतु सहनोभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so now we're on Shabda, so they're defining what is the apta, you know, who is the source of proper knowledge. The Nyaya Sutta gives a detailed description of the nature of Shabda because testimony is considered to be a valid source of knowledge. It should therefore be analyzed thoroughly. In a scripture or testimony, words and sentences are used, but what is a sentence? What is a word and what is the nature of their construction? Here, a sentence may be viewed as a group of words arranged in a certain manner, and a word as a group of letters or phonemes arranged in a specific order. The essential nature of any word lies in its meaning, and there must be specific rules governing the arrangement of words in the formation of sentences. Without such rules, the words spoken, even by a trustworthy person, an apta, could be reordered to convey a different meaning from the one intended, or could mislead a common person because of the lack of clarity of meaning. So that's what when we hear the term word jugglery, yes. That's what they're doing, is they're moving the words around by using the grammar to adjust, you know, the position of the words, and in that way they end up with a different meaning altogether. Excuse me.
I don't have the manual for this one.
Maybe she can be.
Yeah, I would like that. That would be great.
You send over the you send some opposite table.
This is my mother in there. She is not the person.
Who
is organizing
the I'm not organizing anything. I'm recording. Jagannath Kirtan, he's... you mean the classes for the website?
What would you like to do?
Oh, I mean,
sorry,
you can get
please
the classes.
Try again.
Crazy.
No remote.
Oh, he's the remote.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Oh, it's a different machine. Oh, I see. It's just with a remote. Okay,
so then word juggling means that they take it and juggle it around. So that makes a difference. So that's why the Mayavadis... is the meeting is direct and obvious, but it's not what they want. So they juggle the sentence or juggle the shloka verse That way they can come up with a different meaning. So in general, they can do that. You know, that's common, to be able to do that with Shastra, being even able to what the Aptas say, the Acharyas may say, the great sages say. Because they're saying it to an honest person, so it may happen. But we see with Jiva Goswami, because he studied Nyaya for 20 years in Varanasi, right? So then when he wrote it in such a way you could move it around any way you like and you'd still end up with the same thing. So people just don't even touch Jiva Goswami stuff. Right?
Yeah. So they're not actually misinterpreting or twisting the meaning of words?
They could be doing that also, but much of the time is that... See, sometimes a word... There has the same ending, though it's a different case. So just switch what the case is, or the placement of it in the sentence, or stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, because in general, because of the case endings, you can move things around. It doesn't matter, right? But at the same time, as sometimes you can get a different meaning. You know, or they'll break the verse differently, like that. Like Vedanta Sutra, it's like the different sampradayas. They have a different number of sutras. But it's not necessarily that there's any more or less sutras added. It's how they're breaking them. You know, so a big one might be broken into two or into three, or part of this one may be in the next one, or like that. So they'll take where this one ends and the next one has two words, they'll bring those two words into this because they want to bring out that aspect. You know, so depending upon the philosophy, so Vishishtadvait, Vishuddhadvait, Dvaitadvait, then there's different numbers of verses. Yes.
Meaning they don't work on the universal principles of the language? Like,
yeah, they work on the universal principles.
But then it's pretty much kind of structured already. So the way that you can put it, there's not too much...
Well, okay, here. So, one day, you know, a great panda, you know, from Jagannath Puri... Right? You know, the pandas, the pujaris. So this great panda, he went into a restaurant. Right? He ordered something. He ate very nicely. And when he finished, he took out a gun, shot it, you know, and walked out. And then the owner of the restaurant says, "What's going on? You know, why are you doing this?" And he says, "I'm a great panda." He says, "So what does that mean? Look it up in the dictionary." So he looked in the dictionary. And under great panda, and it says, you know, eats shoots and leaves. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that depending upon how you look at it and stuff, sometimes you can get different where you put the emphasis. So that's the only thing. You know, it's like, you know, how you say, you know, he went to the market, okay? So he went to the market. You know, it's like, who is he to go to the market? You know, that one's supposed to go to the market. Who is he to go to the market? Wait, same thing. You know, he went to the market. You know, he went to the market. He went to the market. You understand? So you can get all these different things and how you emphasize, how you do. So that's why there's rules. So then they put in the punctuation, you put the order of the words, but still people can, if they want to get a different, they can switch it. Does that make sense? You know, because that's what is used in here, means under, what is it? Under, what is that under? 14, unfair reply, chala. Which means you take the meaning of the word and you change it. You know, it has synonyms, so you use the wrong synonym.
I can get you the classes, by the way. I have them, so do you have them? With the page number and the date.
I don't have it now. I would like to have them every week, so then I can classify which ones I have.
I'm trying to keep up.
But because the previous ones, yeah, they were not really classified.
No, I know.
No blames.
But I have up until... Yes, today. You only miss one?
No,
usually. Oh, okay. Yeah. Sure. So, yeah, I'll get the pen drive of you this afternoon. That's true. It's going to be tight. I have
We're waiting for the weekend.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I got Sanskrit later for myself. Okay. And that one kind of hit.
It's one of those days, everything I've been doing today, just as I'm going to do it, something else comes up. It's been going on since when? I don't know.
Time immemorial.
Yeah, that's there, but I mean, especially today, I don't know, maybe since 5:30 or something, it's been going like that. So it's one of those days. Yeah. Okay, so that unfair applied chala means that they've adjusted it, you know, or in any case that they've used irrational Vedanta, irrational reasoning, all these things as they're taking it, you know, wrangling, jalpa. They've just taken it and made some adjustment or put the emphasis in the wrong place or changed the context. Maybe they keep the words right, but they change the context or they change the meaning of it to some other meaning, you know. Does that make sense? So that's why then it's supposed to be seen in the context that it's been given. Otherwise, you take it out of that context, it's not, you know, that's not what they're talking about.
But Maharaj, anyone can change the meaning according to his own desire.
Yeah, so that's why then you have what is the, you know, what the scripture's talking about, the Acharya's commentaries, everything like that. So you take that all into context, then it starts to work. Does this make sense? Okay, footnote. The Nyaya system states that all words are significant symbols and that all words have the capacity to designate their respective objects. The capacity of words is called shakti, potency. And in the Nyaya system, the potency is said to be the will of God. Because otherwise, how is it that this combination of letters, you know, put in a particular combination in a sentence, then is able to have the potency to convey that? Mm-hmm. Right? So much so that you can translate it from one language to another. Mm-hmm. You know, even let's say you're talking to an animal. The animal doesn't understand the words, but the potency is conveyed. You know, like that. So that's so here he's understand that's the will of God. So it's actually coming. We'll understand is that's part of Brahman, because the Lord has through his potencies entered it, and therefore it functions. That's the potency, because the dead matter wouldn't do that. You know, it's not by positioning your tongue in a particular way the sound that comes has that potency. No, it's the Lord's potency gives it that shakti.
It's not Paramatma or
matter what form of God.
No.
It's God. That's the name.
No, I'm just stuck in a detail. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
I just wandered off a little bit.
Yeah, no. No, the point is Kiradaksha is see, the thing is the generic element of it and its quality or how it functions, that's Brahman, or you could say Garbhodakshay Vishnu, right? The primary creation. Now,
who's supposed to do what, when, and how, and you know, to whom, that's Paramatma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
Just like if you take a rock and throw it with enough force, mm-hmm. then it has a potency, it could go through a window.
Yeah.
Right? You don't throw it properly, you don't throw it hard enough, it won't go through the window. Mm-hmm. So there's rules how to get a rock through a window.
Yeah.
Right? Now, whether you should be throwing a rock through a window, that's Paramatma. That's the laws. You know, in other words, there's the laws of the mechanics, how it functions, and then there's the laws of who should be working with that functioning. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. So how it's there, that's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu.
Mm.
Then whether you should be involved or not, that's Kirudakshaya Vishnu.
Yeah.
So that's how Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is known as the universal form, and Kirudakshaya Vishnu is known as the universal form.
Mm.
Right? So that means both Pradyumna and Aniruddha are both considered the universal form. Because there's the attraction to and the need for.
Yeah.
Right? So the attractive element, the generalized element, that's Pradyumna. The very specific, what you want to get from that attraction, that's Aniruddha. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Okay. The words used in a sense have certain meanings because of the potencies within them. Right? They didn't have the potency, it wouldn't work. Just like you have a word and somebody uses it in some funny way. You know? And so in the beginning it doesn't have that meaning to people. But with time, then that potency is recognized. Right? Does that make sense? You know, something is like, you know, it's like, how do you say? You know, before it was, you know, you had a magazine, right? So it was a mag, right? Now it's a zine,
yeah.
You know. Does that make sense? You know, does that make sense? You know, you have your house, and now you have your crib.
Yeah.
You know, it's all these different things like that, you know. So it's you know. Yes.
Do we have the same thing in Sanskrit?
They have their poetic use because it's more poetic. Because here they're trying to be poetic, but it's a little bit more refined poetic. So. But otherwise, slang is already built into Sanskrit.
Mm.
You have all these words. That's the first thing you learn, is how Sanskrit slang works, because it's built in, so it's not slang.
Is it Sunday or?
No, it's Sunday. Yeah, it means when one letter follows another letter,
yeah,
many times they change, because you would change it anyway, mm-hmm. right? You know, T's turn into D's, you know, it's all these different, what are in the same, you know, ta-ta-da-da-na,
yeah.
Any of those you might change. You know, pa-pa-ba-ba-ma, ya-ra-la-ba, all those are all the ones you'll change. So there's rules on how those connect and everything. If it says, you know, followed by a cha, then it won't be a sa, it'll be a sha. Sha, cha, go together. But sa, cha, that'll be hard to say. So people won't say sa, cha, they'll say sha, cha. So the grammar is sha, cha.
Yeah.
So unless you say it in the slang way, it's not actually proper Sanskrit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they've already regulated those things. You know, and then how poetics works, what are all the different concepts and all that.
Yeah.
So you have, because the words have so many varieties of meanings that sometimes a word has a meaning that people don't know about, so they use some other word to explain it. But in Sanskrit, that's one of the first things. I remember meeting one, I forget where he was. It was South. I think it was South Indian. He was saying that before they go to Gurukul, they learn this, I'm not sure if it was Amar Sar or Amar Kosh. I think he said Amar Kosh. Amar Kosh, he says you memorize that before you go to Gurukul. So you go to Gurukul at 5, so you've already memorized that before that. He says, so when you go to Gurukul, you already have a 10,000 word vocabulary. Like that. You don't know how to use them or what fully the meanings are, or the significance, but you already know the words. You know, like that. Of course, that was in the 70s. So.
It's a good basis.
Huh?
It's a good basis for Gurukul.
Yeah. Because, you know, your family would speak Sanskrit, you've already memorized this, then when you go to the Gurukul where they're dealing in Sanskrit, it works very easy. So then, because one of the sections is just giving synonyms.
Yeah.
like 10 different names of the sun, or 10 different names of Indra, or all these different things like that, or anything that has synonyms, just that group, so that you know what they are. So that way, then in the poetics, let's say this word is too long, it has too many syllables, this one has the right amount, or this one has the right kind of letters, because you want to use alliteration. Mm-hmm. You know, it depends upon what you want to get, then you choose the word. Mm-hmm. You know, but because of that, we get confused. You know, if I say Varnashram, I say Sanat, say Dharma, I say Sanatan Dharma, I say religion, I say prescribed duties, we may think that those are all separate words, that are all the same word. Right? It means, in other words, different combinations of letters, but the same Shakti. Mm. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, in these, when we're misusing it, is that, let us say, you know, it means you say one of them, and so then they'll use it as another. Yes. You say Varnashram, and then they'll switch it to something else. So either you're trying to raise it, means we'll take it and raise it to Krishna consciousness, but others, mm-hmm. for nainmittic reasons, will adjust it, mm-hmm. to some other lower thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If the people misuse the one of the words, will the Shakti still be there?
It naturally would be there, but then it just becomes you misapply. So then, because you've misapplied, then in the future you won't have the potency. You won't have the ability to work with the potencies. Does that make sense? No. It means it's just like, it means you've heard of or seen people that they can speak so wonderfully. Whatever they say just either sounds fabulous, you don't know what it means, but it sounds great, or they're able to say it very clearly, or they can come up with the right word, and you sometimes go, well, what would you say for this, and they can say the exact word. So that's just that ability to do that. So if you use it properly, then you'll have that, or that'll grow. You don't use it properly, then, you know, you can't use the right word, so you have a very limited vocabulary. Right? I forget what it was one actor was saying when he was working on, I forget what it was. Maybe it was Planet of the Apes or something. So, you know, they basically had, you know, 25 sounds they had to use, and they had to express everything through that. You know, so, you know, he said it was very challenging. Right? You know, so. Yeah, but that's that. If you've been using Ebonics, then, you know, that would have been more than enough words. So. No, it's just like you take, you know, man, okay, so you can go, man, what, man, you know, so it's one word, so you can do everything, so that's the advantage of that style of using. Generally, they use bigger words, like that, like say four letters instead of three, you know? You get more effect, you know.
Easier.
Hmm? Yeah, you can think of emotions, everything like that, yeah. Okay. The words used in a sentence have certain meanings because of the potencies within them, and that is why they express certain meanings in a particular context. Right? In other words, if it's the Lord's potencies, then also the context they're used, how they're used, that's also governed by the Lord's Shakti. Right? So it's not just arbitrary. So express certain meanings in a particular context. So you change the context, they don't explain the same thing. Mm. So the ordering of words in a sentence is very important, right? Because otherwise their context or their position changes. In addition, Nyaya maintains that there are four other factors that are essential in proper functioning of sentences, right? So in other words, there's the Shakti that's there. So that one has to recognize that. So then there's four other elements. Okay. Okay, that there are four other factors that are essential in the proper functioning of sentences, and without the fulfillment of these four conditions, a sentence cannot express the intended meaning. These conditions are akamsha, expectancy, yogyata, fitness, sandini, proximity, and tatparya, intention. Okay, so then akamsha. Huh?
Wouldn't that be sandhi into an N?
Yeah, no, the akanksha. M would be an M with a dot, so yeah, it would be akanksha.
Yeah.
Akanksha, the first condition means expectancy. Akanksha is the quality by which all the words of a sentence imply or expect one another. It is the need that each word has for the other words in the sentence. Right? In other words, if you say one word, you have to have another word. Like that. So that's how the relationship between the words, in other words, their interaction, their connection. According to the Nyaya system, a word is not in itself capable of conveying a complete meaning. It must be brought into relationship with other words in order to express the full meaning intended. For example, when someone hears the word bring, he asks or he thinks about what to bring. It could be a jar, a book, a pencil, a donut, or anything else. Not bad, I'm telling you. Thus, expectancy is the interdependence of words in a sentence for expressing a complete meaning. Okay? Like that. Yogyata, the second condition, means fitness. It refers to the appropriateness of the words in a sentence, to the absence of contradiction in its terms. For example, a sentence like moistened with fire, or he is frustrated because of his inner peace.
Right?
Unless he's a Buddhist. Yeah, okay. So, make no sense because there is a condition between fire and moistening. There is a contradiction between fire and moistening, between frustration and peace. Fire has no ability to moisten anything, and inner peace. Where did it go? Oh, there we go. Inner peace cannot engender frustration. Therefore, though these sentences may be grammatically correct, they do not express valid knowledge. Right? So the yogyata means that they're actually fit. They belong together. It means, in other words, that they have a relationship, but they actually belong together. You know? Like that. Right? Because otherwise, yeah. Let's bring it up here. It's just like in a relationship is there, something's there, you expect something else. Just like you see like a 2-year-old walking down the sidewalk. So what do you expect?
Parents.
Right? You see a parent running after them. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, but you don't expect another 2-year-old to come running up and, where you think you're going? You know? You know, you don't expect that, you know? So, right? Yeah. So like that. So it means relationships, you expect something in the relationship, you know, or anything, a situation. You know what I'm saying? Like I say, you know, well, you have lunch, and you say yes, so you sit down. And then I just bring food. You know, what do you expect?
Conversation.
A plate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, where are you going to put the food, right?
Okay.
You know?
Just like the other day I was shouting for Mikey, he was in the shower, he said, I'm coming out now, and then the curtain's drawn, and then this big hairy Indian guy came out. He was in the next stall. Oh.
I said, you always wondered why you always wear a shirt. Right? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so it's that there's an expectancy, what you expect for that relationship, whatever's there. That has to be there, then it's complete. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So all these things you expect. You know, you go to a fancy, you know, restaurant, and you expect, you know, nice lighting, nice arrangements. Everything will be very nice. You don't expect to, everything's wonderful. You go sit down, and there's like a plastic plate and a plastic spoon there, you know, little partitions on there, you know. You think this doesn't work, right? You know, does that make sense? Yeah.
Hmm. You see the fabulous ads, you know? It looks like really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
You see some people that place there.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's there. That's there. Yeah. The ads, they don't quite catch it. You know? Yeah. So that's right. We always have fun about it. But you know, it's one of those. It's better when it's worse. You know, it's better when it is corny like that. When they actually get it together, you wish they hadn't. You know. Okay. And then, okay, so that's the first thing. So in relationships, you expect that. Yogyata means fitness, means what is being said, means more. It actually applies to the situation. So otherwise, situation may be one thing, and you say the thing that doesn't apply to it. You know, like that. So it's all just part of relationships. So then, if relationships depend on all these, then what you're doing is expressing relationships, right? Because everything has sambandha. Then you're going to apply it and get a result. So therefore, you have to be able to explain all relationships through words. Right? So therefore, there's that direct connection. So it sounds like we're talking about, you know, personal relationships here. You know, like the words are, but it is. Because that's what it is. And its different potencies are connected to each other. So the problem is the potency of peace and the potency of frustration don't go together. Right? If you said frustration and anger, they go together. You know, does that make sense? Or peace, satisfaction, or, you know, they go together. So the point is it's just relationships. Then sanidhi. The third condition means proximity. It is very important for words to be used within the limits of an appropriate time and place. The duration of their use is prolonged, then words no longer have the capacity to give the desired meaning. For example, if someone desires to make a statement, speaks one word today, another word tomorrow, and a third the day after, his efforts at effective communication are certain to fail, right? Unless you're talking to an ent, then it's fine. The same holds true for the written word. If someone writes one word on page 1, another on page 3, one more on page 5, another on page 10, then his meaning will not be communicated effectively, right? Unless it's some kind of weirdo New Age book, you know, then you might be able to get away with it. Continuity of time and space is therefore essential for a sentence to convey meaning. Yeah, so in other words, the words within the thing or the proximity of what you're saying to what's going on, you know, it's just, there's always like the moment didn't come, I couldn't say it because there was the proximity wasn't there. Right? It had happened before. You're waiting for it to happen again, but it hasn't happened, so it has to. Tatparya. The fourth condition means intention and refers to the meaning one intends a sentence to convey. A word may have various meanings depending on its context, so one has to be careful to determine the real intention of the person who uses the word. Right? As we see is when Vaishnav Das and Chudamani are discussing. That's what they're trying to do. What do you mean by this? By that term, by that phrase, by that, you know, like this. Because otherwise you'll waste your time arguing over something when he actually meant what you were talking about. You know, or what you're talking about is completely different than what, you know, so it's... Yeah. This is also the case with scriptural testimony. Even the greatest scholars have disagreements concerning some passages because they do not understand the original intention of those sentences. A very simple illustration is this. Suppose someone tells you to bring him a bat. You have no way of knowing whether you're being asked to provide a particular kind of flying mammal or a wooden clown. You have to appreciate the man's brain here. To understand the real intention of a sentence, one has to comprehend accurately the context in which the words are used. Right? Because of the unique nature of the Sanskrit language and its symbolic usages, the Veda and related ancient religio-philosophical scriptures are full of this kind of complexity and indeterminability of intention. In order to clarify this and understand the Vedic testimony properly, Nyaya recommends that one study the Mimamsa philosophy because it provides systematic rules and interpretations for understanding the real meaning of the Veda. Right, so what is the intention? So how do you know the intention? That then is understood by knowing the philosophy.
So this is why we have Smriti.
Smriti, but also this is why specifically then he says Mimamsa. Because Mimamsa means what is, you know, it's supposed to be the transcendental. So only if it's Vedanta is it transcendental. But it's supposed to mean, your Mimamsa is what's called hermeneutics, which means how you interpret the words. Because there's so many ways you can interpret the words, right? So the philosophy then gives the way when these words come up or these combinations or these situations, you have to interpret it this way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. So when we see it, then it's always, you always see Krishna involved. Yeah. How he's involved, you know, it's Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, like this. But like the impersonalist, then it's always going to be Brahman. Right, whatever is there is illusion, but it's actually, you know, there's originally Brahman. Funny thing is, if it's all Brahman, But then at the same time, it's, this is all illusion. So what's this all, this Brahman? You know?
Yeah.
So the point is, it has its interpretation. So that's why these six systems, if they're known, you understand the six major classifications of interpretation. Right? Then, people take part of this one, part of that one, and, put it together. Because before it was the Adiparampara, so you were in the Nyaya line, Vaisheshika line, Shankya line, Patanjali line. So you stuck to that. And there might be some variations within that in the schools. But it wouldn't be so major, right? Not at least to anybody else. Amongst themselves, of course, it's enough to kill each other. But amongst anybody else, it's like, who cares? The ribbon was, blue. No, it's supposed to be red, like this. And that was for, the whole thing. There was a fight. They burnt the place down. Everything like that. So then, but when one's not working according to Parampara, then the one is simply, it's mental speculation with no connection to Shabda, right? Or it's not connected to one line of Shabda. So you take from here and there, whatever you like, your own perceptions, everything, and kind of put it all together in something. But fortunately, the modes of nature are there, so people can only do that within the modes of nature. So they will follow specific patterns. Right? That's what we'll study after this. What are the patterns of just what the modes of nature take one through in establishing one's philosophy? But according to your philosophy, you'll interpret everything. Right? It means, let's say if someone is environmentalist. So anything anybody's saying, they will interpret according to the environment. Right? So if you're just saying, I like Sunday or something, then, that's okay. But as soon as you say why you like Sunday, then it's, why aren't you out planting trees or something, Does that make sense? I like Sunday because, you can go hunting, like that. So, does that make sense? Hunting, what about all the poor animals? They have rights too. Who said anything about the animals? Yeah. I'm talking about, the guys, on the next block, the other gang, Yes, that's like, oh.
Yeah, fine.
Okay. So the Mimamsa gives exactly what things mean. So that's why they give these very clear definitions. That's the nice thing about the Vedic system, is generally speaking, in these proper lines, very clear definitions. The definitions are clear. The conclusions are not necessarily, but the definitions are clear. So that way, then you can discuss things logically, because you're saying exactly what you mean by the word. Right? So what's the exact Shakti of the word that you're defining? Right? Now, what you're trying to do, your intention with the words, that's the point of discussion. But sometimes it also comes out that you're discussing why that particular word is being used. Why would you use that word? But more of your intentions. Okay, so now... So yes.
In this four condition, there is some, we can say, expectancy is the first one. There is order, more or less.
Means expectancy. In other words, you want to say something. And so there's an essential word that gives that. Right? Like you say, hungry. So what does that mean? You're hungry, he's hungry, a hungry man Jack is coming. You don't know what it means. Right? So therefore you expect other words that are going to expand on that. So whatever's the essential thing you're trying to say, then there's all the things that go along with it.
But is there a relation between this expectancy, fitness, proximity, intention? Because it seems that...
It means, it means, in other words, you have your main point you're trying to make, right? So in other words, what's the tatparya, right? The fourth condition.
Yes.
This is what you want to convey. Now, there's a main word that conveys that, but that main word needs other words to actually convey it. Now, are those other words actually fit to convey that?
Yes.
You understand? So the first one is it needs other words. The second one is that are those words that you're using fit, right? And the third means is that you actually have to put them all together so that, you're not putting it, That's what's so special. Now, words work like that, but how does the holy name work? You understand in connection with this point?
Completely different.
Yes, means you can have something where you have part of the name here and part of the name there with syllables in between. It still gets the effect of the holy name.
Yes.
But in regular words, you know, in the potency of just words, it doesn't work like that. There must be proximity. Right? The word must be together. It must be with the proper words. It must be connected with the association you're trying to express it towards. You know what I'm saying? It must be in a time frame. So in other words, the time, place, and circumstance must all be applied there. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
But the point is tatpari is what you're trying to do. It means you have a point to be made.
Yes. Yes.
Right? So, but that point to be made has words to express it. They must be appropriate words, and they must be said at the right time, at the right place.
Yes. With the right intention.
That's the tatpari.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
That's the intention.
Yes.
Right? So the point is your intention also has specific words. You have this intention, there's words that convey that intention. Right? It has to be said in the right time. But the point is it requires other words to bring it out. And those other words, that they have to have the qualification.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, it's very easy. What do you want to say? And then you fill everything else out. You know what I'm saying? So that's what's very nice about this, because if this approach like this is much easier to teach someone how to write or do something, because you know what to say.
Yes.
You know, because the first thing you do is, well, what should I say? Like, just like if I'm sitting there and I'm setting up all the microphones and everything like that, and I hand you the mic, say something. What's the normal thing people say? That's there. You know, a little something. He's like, well, what should I say? You know, because they don't know what to say.
She was a rodeo.
Well, you forgot the testing. Rodeo. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, 1, 2, 3.
The rodeos always say Hare Krishna.
Yeah, yeah.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Yes.
The difference with the holy name, too, would be that it doesn't have the capacity to designate another object, because it itself is the object. It's not pointing to an idea.
Yeah, that's true. It's the source of Shakti. It's not Shakti itself. That's true. And it doesn't matter what time, place, or circumstance you say it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it doesn't matter whether it's a fit time or not, or it doesn't matter. So it's transcendental to all these rules.
That's no matter what.
Yeah. That's a good point. It's not just it's all four of them. It's transcendental to everything. So we see is that there's a lot more to it than just we've heard this. Yeah, of course. But technically, you know, that there's meanings there. Why that's like that. Like that. Okay, that was the bottom of that. So now move on to prameya. So that's so that was praman, right? So perception, inference, comparison, and testimony was praman. Right? Then the next thing is prameya, means what is the object of the knowledge? In other words, you're using knowledge, but what is the object? What's it pointing to? What's it trying to establish? Right? So that's this whole list here. Right? Of Atman, the body, the five senses, the objects of the senses, cognition, mind, activity, mental defects, attachment, hatred, and infatuation, rebirth, results, suffering, freedom from suffering. So that's your prameya. Okay. Prameya may be translated as that which is knowable, right? So you have the source of knowledge, but the point is what is known, right? Or the object of true knowledge. Yes.
My question is: we have the Nava Prameya in our line. That's also the Madhvas use that, or all Vaishnavas sometimes. What's the difference between our Prameyas and the Nyaya Prameya?
The Nyaya Prameyas are here just what can be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taking it to the point that the Prameyas are, you know, what should be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by knowing that, then you know everything. Because by us knowing the Dasa Mool, then we know how to deal with each one of these. We have something to say on each one of these.
Yeah.
You know, but just because you know what mind is or activity is, doesn't mean you know what its purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that would be the difference. The principle is just what, in other words, you have what is what is the source of knowledge, or what is valid knowledge, and what is that valid knowledge discussing or conveying, mm-hmm. like that. So that's what you're doing. So, you know, the basis is the in this case is apta, or the shastra, you know, like that, and the basis and what will be discussed are the things of this world, right? So everything in this world can be put into these 12 objects. Right, so this is just a system how everything in the world can be discussed, right? But the point is how we would discuss everything in this world. We break it into God, the living entity, the material energy, their relationship, and the result of that relationship, right? Because that's how the Upanishads. So that's Vedanta. It'll always put means everybody will use that, but it's whether they know that they're using it or not. So. They'll have their process, their result, but what they actually put into Sambandha mm-hmm. may vary.
Yeah.
Like that. Because like in here, God's not such a big discussion. It's more about the soul and the material energy, because that's where the problem is. The soul and the material energy don't get on. So you're trying to know what they are so you can tell the difference so you can get the soul out of here. Right? But because they don't include God, they don't have a good conclusion where he's supposed to go. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So that which is knowable, or the object of true knowledge, because he's trying to get to true knowledge, but true knowledge means how to get yourself out of here. They're not taking it. True means how to get yourself into the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the ultimate true knowledge. So this is more true than material knowledge, but it's not as true as the absolute knowledge.
Those sages, they were so advanced in their learning and knowledge. How could they see the fallacies in their theory?
Because in other words, just like Vyasadeva wrote the Puranas for those in the mode of ignorance. Does that make sense? It's not that he's in the mode of ignorance, it's just there are people in the mode of ignorance that they're only going to follow Vedic authority if they have something that speaks to them. Does that make sense? Right? So in other words, the Nyaya philosophy then is something that there are those where they'll follow the Vedas and use this as their philosophy. You know. But like, we can look through these things and find what's the actual point. But for them, those would be side points. Like, he talks about God, but they don't put any emphasis there, while we would put the emphasis there. Does that make sense? So in other words, they write in such a way that everybody can be engaged. That's the idea. So it's not that they don't... it's one of those, they may or may not know, but the point is they're writing to engage a particular mentality. You know, that's their duty. Does that make sense? So it's in philosophy and medicine and social sciences and architecture, all these things they've all written in. And so then all those things, you can see how it connects to the Lord. Right? But the problem is they're writing to bring out that subject matter. So in doing that, one may miss its connection to the Lord. Does that make sense? So that's what happens. That which is the object of cognition is prameya. Right? In other words, what you are conscious of, that's prameya. And whatever is comprehended or recognized by buddhi is categorized into 12 objects of cognition known as the prameyas. Whatever is comprehended or cognized.
Cognized.
Is categorized into 12 objects of cognition known as the prameyas. Have you cognized
them? Yeah, it's like where we get recognized.
Yeah, so then there's the cognitionability, you know, like that. Cognizalization. That's the problem, is English doesn't recognize, but you could do all these things, technically. Have some real fun.
The cognizator?
Yes, yes. And the cognizated.
Do you quit cognizating me? I feel so cognized.
You always do that.
These 12 divisions are... Okay, so it means what it means. What is the object of cognition is prameya. So whatever is comprehended by the intelligent can be is categorized into 12 objects. Means 12 optics of cognition. So that means they're taking it, everything can fit into these 12. Right? Because otherwise, if you have this unlimited way and you can put it together anyway, how do you actually come, you work with it very solidly. Mm. So you have to have something that everything fits into. Mm. You know, even though it may appear to be different, no, it fits into. Mm. Does that make sense? These 12 divisions are Atman, the self, Sharira, the body, the abode of experience of pain and pleasure, that is the seat of all organic activities. Indriyas, the 5 senses, smell, taste, sight, touch, and hearing, which contact external objects and transmit the experience to the mind. Artha, the objects of the senses. Right, so in other words, you know, what is smelled, what is tasted, what is touched. Buddhi, cognition. Manas, the mind, the internal sense that is concerned with the perception of pleasure, pain, and all other internal experiences, and that, according to Nyaya, limits cognition to time and space. The mind is compared to an atom, not the atom of modern physics, see Vaisheshika philosophy, because it is minute, everlasting, individual, and all-pervading. One may complain, no, but the mind is so big. But remember, we're only 1/10,000 the tip of the hair, so, you know, it has to be able to fit into that. Mm. Because it is minute, everlasting, individual, and all-pervading.
Right.
Okay.
How do we understand all-pervading?
It's everywhere. It means, in other words, what we're saying is that, see, is that you have that all the elements in a homogenized situation are pervading everywhere, everything, right? Now, then in the primary creator, in the Mahat, then these are separated so that here is mind, here's intelligence, here's ego, and like that, as a resource, right? And so therefore then the universe is done in this way. Then you have the next step where then atoms of those, right? In other words, all the pradhan means all the atoms are homogeneously mixed.
Homogeneously
mixed.
Homogenized.
They've been homogenized, yes. Right? So the mahatattva is the unhomogenization of them, and then into the categories. Then there's the rules are made. How those can be put together. You put together so many atoms of this and that, and you end up with a dog. You put it together like this, you get a tree. You get like this, you get a fish. You know, like that. So then in the secondary creation, you see it manifest. But the point is all these elements are all pervading everywhere. It's just that you can see them. They're held together here. So there's a lot of earth elements here, atoms here, so you see the column. But otherwise, there's floating everywhere. It's you know what I'm saying? It's just where there's a predominance. So where there's air, that's where there's a predominance of that one. You know what I'm saying? Where you see a mountain, there's a predominance of earth. But it's not that the others aren't there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So then like that, everything is. Okay. Pravritti. Activity, vocal, mental, and physical. Dosha, mental defects that include attachment, raga, hatred, dvesha, and infatuation or delusion, moha. Pratyabhava, rebirth or life after death. Phala, the fruits or results of actions experienced as pain or pleasure. Right? So in other words, the results of your karma. Dukkha, suffering, the bitter or undesired experiences of mind. And Apavarga, liberation or complete cessation of all suffering without any possibility of its reappearance. So they want that without any possibility of its reappearance, but that can only happen if it is connected to
devotional service to the Lord.
That's praying.
Yeah. So they want that, but they don't know how to get it. So they think by logic they'll get it, but you can only get it by devotion. Right? So that's why it's limited. Even though you can analyze, know so many things, you can't get it if it's not established in that way. Right? You know, through devotion. According to Nyaya philosophy, the goal of life is to understand these 12 aspects of reality, the pramayas, as they actually are. Bondage is born of misunderstanding of these 12 noble objects. And one attains freedom from bondage when he attains the correct knowledge of these 12 aspects of reality. Right? Because if you actually understand how these work, what's the soul, what's the body, what are the senses, the sense objects, the mind, karma, all this, then you actually understand things as they are. Yes?
But in this 12 division, there is no God.
I guess it's not an object that they want to know, so that's why they haven't put him here. Unless they count in with Atman, you know, means there's the supreme Atman. Because that's, I mean, how if we were using this, that's where we put it. There's the supreme soul, there's the soul. Right? Because it's not so complete, because it doesn't get into, that's why ours are more complete. You start with God, his potencies, his, how do you say, his position, his potencies, and relationships. You're at rasa, right? Then you actually understand properly there. Then you get into the soul, right? Because this, the body, most all these other things, these are what we call the material energy. So that's just a potency of the Lord. So by doing this, one can understand how one's different from the body and free yourself from connection with the body, right? But the point is that's not just what you want to do. You want to establish your relationship with God. Therefore, this process has... So more important is the relationship with God. If you have a relationship with God, you've automatically gotten out of the material world. Yes. So you don't have to use this group exclusively. It means it has its position, but it's only part of the thing. Right? So therefore, knowing God, knowing our relationship with God, and that process of devotion towards God, right? Then these are automatic. We all, it means we're familiar with all these, right? It's not that anything here is something new. It's like, wow, that's different from, no, everything is here. But as pointing out, is that there are things that they don't discuss very seriously, right? Because it's just a given that God's like that in the Vedas, you know, Apurusheya, right? Okay.
Just happens to be the most important thing they're not discussing.
Yeah, because they want to get out of the material world, but they don't understand you can't make this what is here. Complete cessation of all suffering without any possibility of its reappearance. In other words, they were trying to be thorough. They don't know you can only be thorough if there's devotion. So that's the weakness in it. Yes?
Mars, I was just wondering about if you have complete knowledge these 12 noble objects, then one attains freedom from bondage. My question is, even if one knows what the right thing is, then still living in these attached to three modes of material nature?
Yeah, well, you have to be able to apply it. Otherwise, then you have this thing here, is that dosha. Because otherwise, if dosha is there, mental defects that include attachment, hatred, and illusion. Right? So then you won't be able to apply them properly. Right? So that's why you depend upon those who are beyond that. Right? So that's what the meaning, the apta, means he's beyond this. Right?
And Nyayas are doing activities also? They're doing like karma yoga? Or?
The main thing is just analyzing everything.
Contemplation.
Yeah. So most all of them are processes of gyan. Right, yoga means you're doing karma yoga up to a point, and then it switches. But the karma mimamsa is just karma. It means they have knowledge, but its main thing is the knowledge is about how to do the rituals, like that.
So mainly these people, they were renunciants?
Not necessarily. Like we see is that Nyaya is very popular, but much of the time, those who know Nyaya, it's only as a method of discussion or argument.
not so many necessarily know it as the philosophy. You know, or it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
This comes up later in the Abhideya section of Nyaya.
Okay. According to Nyaya philosophy, the goal of life is to understand these 12 aspects of reality, the pramayas, as they actually are. Bondage is born of the misunderstanding of these 12 noble objects. And one obtains freedom from bondage when he attains the correct knowledge of these 12 aspects of reality. Most of the time, however, this knowledge remains incomplete and the means for attaining an integral comprehension of reality is not learned. So defective or invalid knowledge is maintained. In order to cast off this invalid knowledge, Nyaya provides a profound method for determining valid knowledge, right? So in other words, since the whole point is you have to study the pramayas to understand how to get out of the material nature. So that means then you have to have valid knowledge, right? So that means that is your praman, right? So then how to understand whether everything is proper or not, so then they establish that, and then here it is determining valid knowledge, right? So you have your methods for obtaining it, but how to determine if it's correct or if you're using it properly, right? So that's then these other you know, I guess you're 3 through what is it? 16. Like that. But those 3 through 16 are just so that you make sure that your application of praman is proper in your study of pramaya. Or you're. Doubt. Shamshaya. Shamshaya means doubt. It is the state in which the mind wavers between conflicting views regarding a single object. In a state of doubt, there are at least two alternative views, neither of which can be determined to lead to a state of certainty. Shamshaya is not certain knowledge, neither is it a mere reflection of knowledge, nor is it invalid knowledge. It is a positive state of cognition, but the cognition is split in two and does not provide any definite conclusions. Right? It is not certain knowledge because you're not certain which is which. There are options. It's neither a reflection of knowledge because it's actually knowledge. You just don't know which one to take as prominent or which one is the conclusion. Nor is it invalid knowledge because it may be both. They're all facts, but you don't know which one to do. Right? So it means, in other words, the doubt means that there is cognition. There is, because it's a doubt, that's why you ask questions.
Doubt is a sign of intelligence.
Yeah, because otherwise how do you see two different things? Right. But the point is if it's based on other things like the those weaknesses and that, then the difficulty you'll come up with these anxieties or other things that even though if you then do establish it, you can't follow it. So that's why dosha then is a problem. Like that. Unless you're in the south, they don't have any problem. Okay, dosha. Oh, it's mental defects. Okay. Is everything else he puts the Sanskrit, but somehow that he doesn't put in pramayas. I'm not sure why. Okay. For example, in the dark of the night, a person may be looking at a plant, but because he cannot see clearly, he does not recognize a plant for what it is, and falsely perceives it as a man. However, if it would be logically impossible for a man to be present in that place, then the mind does not accept that the figure is a man. The mind becomes confused at that moment. The mind becomes confused at that moment when it questions whether it is a man or plant and cannot come to a decision about what it actually is. Thus, doubt is a product of a confused state of mind, is not able to perceive with clarity. Right? In other words, you're perceiving two different things, right? But it's not clear what it is. So, two. In Bhagavad Gita 4:39-40, it is stated, a faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge
and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge. And having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport. Such knowledge and Krishna consciousness, right? So you want to avoid doubt. So that means you're going to analyze your knowledge. You know, you want to make sure you have valid knowledge, because the point is if it's valid knowledge, then you'll know whether it's a man or a plant. Right? Like that. But the problem is you're aware, you're conscious. Right? The senses and sense objects are interacting, but the validity of the knowledge, that you can't define. Such knowledge and Krishna consciousness can be achieved by a faithful person who believes firmly in Krishna. One is called a faithful man who thinks that simply by acting in Krishna consciousness, he can attain the highest perfection. This faith is attained by the discharge of devotional service and by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, which cleanses one's heart of all material dirt. Over and above this, one should control the senses. A person who is faithful to Krishna and who controls the senses can easily attain perfection and knowledge of Krishna consciousness without delay. Right? Because what is one of the main problems that are going to give difficulty is mental defects. Mm. Right? So therefore, if one doesn't control the senses, right? Because that's going to come from dosha, from a mental defect. Mm. Right? And because of that, then you're going to get that even though you're perceiving these other things, you're not going to deal with them properly. So then doubt may come up. Mm-hmm. Out of many standard and authoritative revealed scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita is the best, right? Because Vaishnava Das mentioned that all sampradayas, all groups accept Bhagavad Gita. So that's why if the specific book you use, you know, or you're quoting from doesn't work, you can always go back to Gita. Right? That's the main one that everybody appreciates. Persons who are almost like animals have no faith in or knowledge of the standard revealed scriptures. And some, even though they have knowledge of or can cite passages from the revealed scriptures, have actually no faith in these words. And even though others may have faith in scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, they do not believe in or worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Such persons cannot have any standing in Krishna consciousness. They fall down. Out of all the above mentioned persons, those who have no faith and are always doubtful make no progress at all. Men without faith in God and his revealed word find no good in this world, nor in the next. For them there's no happiness whatsoever. Right? So this whole idea of being doubtful, then it's just a matter of placing oneself in the mode of ignorance. Because then you can't tell what's that, what actually is and all that. And so one can just become absorbed like that. So it has a particular taste, but it's not recommended. Right? So that's why the mode of goodness is there, because it's illuminating, it's based on knowledge. Right, so that's considered to be the appropriate. That's why these other modes aren't recommended. One should therefore follow the principles of revealed scriptures with faith and thereby be raised to the platform of knowledge. Only this knowledge will help one become promoted to the transcendental platform of spiritual understanding. In other words, the principles of the revealed scriptures, that's what you have faith in, so that's what you follow. Right? You have that, then that's good. Does that make sense? I thought. In other words, doubtful persons have no status whatsoever in spiritual emancipation. One should therefore follow in the footsteps of great acharyas who are in the disciplic succession and thereby attain success.
Yes. Interesting how atheists usually kind of boast about being skeptics. So in this light, Yeah. It's not really a high platform.
No, because the point is then if there's a conclusion, then you would have to do it.
Apply,
The point is they're too proud.
Yeah.
So they have it worked out themselves. They may be skeptical, but that you see is what they are, is they're skeptical about what everybody else does. They have their exact what they eat, where they go, what they wear, how they talk, who they talk to. So the more skeptical they are, the more exact they are in this. Mm. You know, so it's just they're focused. But the problem is then because they don't accept authority, they can't get anywhere in Krishna consciousness, right? So here's somebody out of pride, which is also mode of ignorance, right? Someone else, it's lack of self-confidence.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, they're doubtful.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's this, and what if we go there? What if that happens? And what if we do? But, okay, so then don't go. But then what if, we miss out on what should have been there?
Yeah.
So then go. No, but what if we go and then, we don't get what we were wanting to get? So then don't go. No, but if we don't go, then we will never know if we, like that.
Yeah.
Like that. So they never get anything here or there.
I know that guy.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, so the point is if they don't do something, you won't know what it is anyway. Right? And it's no use lamenting, I did it, because it's already done. So now it's what are you going to do now? Right? Okay, aim, prayojana. The word prayojana means aim. Without an aim or a target, no one can perform any action. It does not matter whether that aim is fully understood or just presumed. One acts either to achieve desirable objects or to get rid of undesirable ones. Right? Because there's always the positive and negative. These desirable and undesirable objects that motivate one's activities are known as prayojana. Example. Drishtanta. Drishtanta is the use of an example to illustrate a common fact and establish an argument. This is a very important aspect of reasoning. For frequently, a useful example can be accepted by both parties involved in a discussion without any disputation or difference of opinion. For instance, when one argues that there must be fire because there is smoke, he may use the example of smoke in the kitchen to confirm the permanent relationship between fire and smoke. The relation between fire and smoke in the kitchen is a common occurrence that may be readily accepted by both parties. Therefore, the example of the kitchen for confirming the existence of fire inferred from the presence of smoke is potentially very helpful. I'm not sure if this is an example used by Nyaya itself. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But means people don't necessarily think about it. If you bring it up, okay. But most people don't think about that. But the one thing is when you have, these big kitchens and or restaurants or different things like that, or people are really into cooking, then they always have something to take care of smoke. Right? Though you may not see so much smoke, but it's there. So there is that concept. But if you go into the Vedic, what will you be cooking with? Yeah, cow dung, wood, something. And that makes smoke. You understand? So it's automatic. You have to, because of that connection between smoke and fire, therefore, then that's very common. You light the fire, what's the first thing you get? Smoke. Yeah. Yeah, so... So I'm not sure if this is a, one that's given in Nyaya because, previously everyone would cook in that way, or if it's something that the author got from dealing with our kitchens. when you light the fires, within 100 feet there are no mosquitoes. There's that much smoke. Yeah. Okay, doctrine, Siddhanta. It is an axiomatic postulate that is accepted as the undisputed truth and that serves as the foundation for the entire theory of a particular system of philosophy. This accepted truth might be derived either from direct experience or from reason and logic. For example, it's the doctrine of Nyaya, philosophy that there is a God, Nimitta Karana, who is the operative cause of the universe and who organizes and regulates the atoms. Right? So that's a basis, that's an axiomatic postulate. It's always there, so it's always to be considered. Right? But you see, the thing is the difference here is God is there, but he's the one that's dealing with the operative cause of the universe and organizes and regulates the atoms. So he's only basically dealing with the creation, maintenance, and destruction. So why he's doing that, you know, or his original forms, or even this, they're basically dealing what's within the universe. They're not discussing necessarily Mahavishnu and all this. So the Lord is there. So just the capacities of Brahman and Paramatma are being discussed. Constituents of inference, 7. Oh, the 5 avyayas. But isn't that what's up here? Yeah, I guess it's just the points of inference, because that's what you're going to use.
Okay.
So in other words, that's how you establish what is valid knowledge, but it's also just how you are going to present the process. Yeah. Constituents of inference, 5 avyayas. The term avyaya literally means constituent or parts. And in this context, it refers to the constituents of inference. This is an important topic in Nyaya philosophy, because Nyaya strongly emphasizes describing the minute complexities of the pramanas, the sources or methods of receiving correct knowledge. Among these methods, inference is the most important source of correct knowledge. And Nyaya therefore provides a technical method to test the validity of inference. If an inference contains 5 necessary constituents, then it can give correct knowledge. These 5 requisite components of inference are pratigya, statements, hetu, reason, udaharana, example, upanaya, universal proposition, and nigamana, conclusion. Prabhupada also uses these terms like that, because Vyasadeva then uses slightly different terms, right? But this includes, because the point is you're working out the point. So there's an argument and these different kinds of things. Is this one here? No, this is reason, example, universal, like that. I think Vyasadeva, because he's defeating all these, then he uses others, which means that he'll put as the second one, that instead of hate, he'll put doubt. Yes. Because when you make your statement, it doesn't mean, how do you argue with the statement?
Yeah, yeah.
It's when you give your reason, that's where it is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's where doubt comes up. Right, and so then when you're giving example, they're presenting their antithesis, like that. Does that make sense? You know, and then this universal proposition means it's the same thing. It's where it applies to everything. You know, the whole what you're discussing, and so therefore brings it back to the conclusion. But in the other, it means that you're synthesizing the other ones into yours. That's why it's universal. So all is the difference between just this would be the natural presentation. But now if somebody is having a problem with it, then this is where that would fit in. So you have these two sets of terminologies that mean the same thing. It's just different perspectives. Because sometimes that becomes confusing. They think there's two systems. Well, you know, do we use Gotama system or Vyasa system? They're the same thing. Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't pick up the universal proposition. Can you give us an example
Means the universal light, because wherever there's smoke, there's fire. So that's universal.
Oh, yes.
You know, so that's brought it in.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But the example being given is the kitchen.
Yes.
You know, because you know that situation. Right? So therefore, because there is the universal connection between smoke and fire, therefore, because there's smoke on the mountain, there's fire on the mountain. So the conclusion is there's fire on the mountain. Right? So my statement is there's fire on the mountain. Why? Because there's smoke.
right? So that may raise a doubt from me. You know, back to our octopus. Well, no, actually, it wouldn't work out, because if there's an octopus smoking cigars, there is fire, so therefore there's smoke. Yeah, so that wouldn't work. Okay, footnote 3. Ooh. Okay, looks like we're have to do you with the footnote 3. Today is what, Tuesday?
Yeah.
So on Thursday. Yeah, so this is Bhaktisiddhanta says what he talked about. Like that. So you got some very nice stuff. Because he says some really nice things.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.